This is the Breaker.News podcast for February 18th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. A special Xingyang Kuailer and Gongxi Fa Chai to those of you who are celebrating Lunar New Year, the Year of the Dog. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this episode, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines from around the Olympics, Cascadia Calling, headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature, we check in with sports agent Brant Feldman, who was at the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea. And The Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone who made a difference this week. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is the crackdown on Vancouver's PacNet services long overdue? British Columbia's Director of Civil Forfeiture filed a lawsuit in court, hoping that a judge will freeze bank accounts and real estate assets of the payment processing company, its founder Roseanne Day, and some of the company's directors and investors. Authorities in the United States temporarily branded the company a criminal organization in 2016. British and Canadian authorities are also investigating PacNet for mail fraud. None of the allegations has been proven in court, and the company has not filed a defense statement. The lawsuit claims thousands of people, many of them elderly, were bilked for millions of dollars in mail order schemes. PacNet benefited from an undisclosed amount of tax breaks from the former BC Liberal government's Advantage BC scheme. The court filings indicate that the Vancouver police are also investigating PacNet. British Columbia has had a long history of swindles. Remember the Vancouver Stock Exchange? At a time when the intersection of real estate, casinos, and the drug trade is coming into focus, British Columbians need action. They need an anti-corruption inquiry, a permanent anti-corruption police agency, an independent ethics commissioner for every ministry, Crown Corporation, and Municipal Hall, as well as stringent anti-secrecy enforcement. No more dimly lit corners. Will Attorney General David Eby and Premier John Horgan do the right thing? Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim, a special Olympic edition where we look at news headlines around the Korean Peninsula. First, in the Korea Times, Oh Young-jin and Jane Han report, Koreans here and in U.S. organizing Starbucks boycott. In South Korea, people are trying to organize boycotts online against Starbucks products after it was revealed that NBC Sports commentator Joshua Cooper Ramo, who belittled Koreans while broadcasting the Pyeongchang Olympics opening ceremony, belonged to the Global Coffee Makers Board. They're furious at the Java Giants board member who NBC fired over his Olympic opening ceremony remarks about Japan's 1910 to 1945 occupation of the Korean Peninsula. Cooper Ramo said during the opening ceremony broadcast that every Korean will tell you that Japan is a cultural, technological, and economic example that has been so important to their own transformation. Cooper Ramo eventually apologized 5 days after the broadcast. Cooper Ramo is also the vice chairman at former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger's consultancy. Also in the Korea Times, Nam Hyun Woo reports that IOC OK's Statue of Liberty nays Admiral Yi. The International Olympic Committee is possibly showing a double standard in its rules over prohibiting political statements in sports as it allows U.S. women's ice hockey goaltenders to wear masks, including an image of the Statue of Liberty, while banning a Korean's mask with its national hero. USA Today reported that the IOC decided to allow the Statue of Liberty image to stand on the goalie masks belonging to U.S. players Nicole Hensley and Alex Rigsby. The move is in stark contrast with the IOC's February 3rd decision to ban Korean men's ice hockey goalie Matt Dalton from wearing his mask printed with the image of Admiral Yi Sun-sin. Yi, a naval commander of the Joseon dynasty, is depicted here as a hero who defended the country from a Japanese invasion in the 1590s. In the decision, the IOC interpreted that the image can throw a political message to the subtle relations between South Korea and Japan. Dalton, coincidentally, is from London, Ontario. That's the special Olympic edition of Around the Rim on the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling, when we look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Seattle Times, Lewis Camb reports, man who accused Ed Murray of sexual abuse found dead in Auburn motel. Delvon Hecker, the Kent man whose sexual abuse lawsuit against Seattle Mayor Ed Murray last year prompted other allegations to come to light, and eventually leading to Murray's resignation, was found dead early Friday of an apparent drug overdose in an Auburn motel. In my opinion, a hero died, said his attorney, Lincoln Beauregard. Hecker had been in recovery for addiction to cocaine and other illicit drugs when he sued Murray in April, alleging Murray had repeatedly paid him for sex in the late 1980s when he was a teenager. Hecker turned 47 on Valentine's Day. He recently received a $100,000 payment as part of a $150,000 settlement with the City of Seattle to dismiss his suit against Murray and the city. Beauregard said he had set up a trust account for Hecker so that he wouldn't spend the money too quickly. Murray has denied all of his accusers' allegations. In the Breaker.News, we reported that NDP government cracks down on company that scored BC Liberal tax breaks. British Columbia's NDP government wants to seize $13 million worth of properties from a company and its principals that the United States government temporarily branded a significant transnational criminal organization. In BC Supreme Court filings on February 14th, the Director of Civil Forfeiture alleges that PacNet Services engaged in unlawful predatory mail fraud schemes primarily targeting the elderly. The court documents further charge PacNet processed millions of payments worth hundreds of millions of dollars from tens of thousands of victims. None of the allegations has been proven in court. The defendants have not filed a response. The properties the government wants to seize and resell range from Boundary Bay beachfront to 10 acres on Keats Island and a waterfront house and boat dock on the Sunshine Coast. Company founder Roseanne Phyllis Day's West 22nd Avenue home in Vancouver is worth $4.5 million. And siblings on opposite sides of Trans Rockies NDP trade tiff. Not only has the Trans Rockies Tar Sands versus Tenon trade tiff pitted one province's NDP government against another, but siblings are on opposite sides of the dispute. Alberta pro-pipeline Premier Rachel Notley's executive assistant Parm Kalan is the sister of rookie Delta North NDP MLA Ravi Kalan, who became Parliamentary Secretary for Multiculturalism and Sport under BC anti-pipeline Premier John Horgan last July. Parm Kalan was a constituency assistant for NDP MLAs Spencer Chandra Herbert, Judy Darcy, and Sue Hamill in BC until 2015, when she moved to Edmonton to join the Notley crew. Both Parm and Ravi acknowledged that they sometimes disagree. But Parm Kalan wrote in an email to The Breaker, "We have a very understanding family, and everything is fine at home." That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for the big deal. I'd like to welcome to the Breaker.News podcast Brant Feldman of American Group Management. AGM is a Los Angeles-based agency that represents Olympic athletes, including Megan Duggan and the Lamoureux twins from the USA women's hockey team, Ski Cross Canada's Kelsey Serwa of British Columbia, and Megan Augusta, who is on duty with the Canadian women's hockey team. She's on a break from being on duty with the Vancouver Police. Brant is coming to the Breaker.News podcast from the Pyeongchang 2018 Winter Olympics. Welcome to the podcast, Brant. Tell us what it has been like so far in Pyeongchang, in South Korea, for the 2018 Winter Olympics.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bob. First off, the Korean people have been super friendly. I can't tell you that that's necessarily always been the case at every Olympics I've been at, but the Korean people have been very friendly and open and welcoming. And even though there is a language barrier with English, they've tried to go out of their way to be friendly and be happy, and I've certainly noticed that first.
And the other team that people have been talking about is the Olympic athletes from Russia. They're not allowed to wear the Russian flag. They're competing under the IOC flag because of the legacy of the Sochi 2014 doping scandal.
I was irritated by the OAR fans at the USA women's hockey game a couple days ago. So obviously the North Koreans have cheerleaders that have been, in a sense, credentialed by the IOC to be there and come and do it, everything else. Well, guess what? At the USA OAR game the other night, Russia had their own cheerleaders in the stands with people in the with flying the flags behind them and everything else. And I'm thinking, you know, the IOC was giving grief to a U.S. goalie for having the Statue of Liberty painted on the side of her helmet. At the same time, OAR has cheerleaders doing things in an organized way back towards the team, with the fans going Russia, 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 and I'm thinking to myself, well, where's the IOC on that one? I mean, if they're not supposed to be doing coordinated things, and they're not stopping it in venue, it's very hit or miss of what the IOC wants to do with the fans of OAR, you know, I've seen fans in from Russia either wearing, you know, "We are Russia," or wearing things to the effect of, you know, "We're still here." And I get that, and I respect that. And those fans have paid a lot of money to come over here, but they don't take seriously OAR. They don't take seriously that their country doped or did anything wrong, and they think that everyone made this up to penalize Russia, and that Russia would be the top country at this Olympics right now if it wasn't for this world conspiracy against the people of Russia. And no one is taking accountability. No one is saying that we did all this stuff. There's no apology coming. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't think they should be here at all. In my own case, I'm one of them because I represented Stephen Holcomb of the U.S. bobsled team, who won gold in Vancouver in 2010 and two bronze medals in Sochi. And Russia did dope, and that was upheld. And his family will eventually get two silver medals, and the Swiss will get gold, and the Latvians will get gold, and Team GB that hadn't won a bobsled medal in probably 30 or 40 years, they'll go from fifth to third, and Latvia will go from fifth to third in men's bobsleigh. And, you know, those kids didn't get their moment, and you know, it's sad.
About these Olympics, how do they compare to past Olympics you've attended? I mean, what new and different things are they doing better than previous Olympics, and what are they doing that they should have been doing?
You know, I'll tell you what, Bob. This is my 10th Olympics attending, 8th Olympics working, and I was at Vancouver, and I've been to many of the foreign ones. And the Koreans really have tried. This area, this part of the country, is not a developed mountain resort as of yet. There are a dire lack of shortage of hotel options, and there's a lot of families that will come back to Canada after the games, and they're gonna complain about how awful their accommodations were. But what I want to make sure, though, that people realize is that the Korean people here on the ground have been terrific. Now, the venues themselves, I haven't been to all of them. I'm going to Skeleton tonight, and going to more events, so I'll have a better sense of some of these facilities. But I've been told that the bobsled Skeleton luge track has a lot of similarities to Whistler. And the way that if you go skiing at Whistler and you have the village right at the base of the at the base of that area is very similar to Whistler. Then as it relates to some of the other legacy facilities that they have here, you know, this will be a good place to come for a vacation, I think, in the future. The high-speed train is relatively inexpensive for people from North America. So, you know, getting from in, you could literally get on the train at Incheon, and go, you know, you'll stop five or six times, stay on the same train, and go right to the mountain resort. Do you need to write everything down with where you're going in Korean? Yes. Is English just a suggestion? Sort of. But the Korean people are trying, and you really notice the hustle of the Koreans, and I really like that. Are there things that could be better? Certainly there is. And that's why many sponsors did not come, at least from the United States perspective. NBC did all of their corporate hospitality in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where they could then control the environment, stay at a 5-star hotel, and really take care of their advertisers. The U.S. Olympic Committee did a similar program where they did an event in Park City with many of their advertisers, and next weekend they do an event in Lake Placid. The Canadian Olympic Committee has different sponsors coming to Korea, and actually one of my clients, Jennifer Jones from the women's curling team, she will be embedded with those corporate sponsors and hanging out with them and giving them the perspective of an Olympic champion going through an event. So there are things like that that Canadians sponsors will see this week. Canada House has been great. They changed the setup and the format of what they've done in the past, where when you're in there, you do have to pay for Molson Canadian and Coors Light. But Air Canada does do a poutine bar for a couple hours a day, complimentary, which is terrific. The poutine is great. The curds are just like home. Hudson Bay Company has a store where you can buy relatively the same merchandise that you see at the Bay at home. CBC's coverage on the big screens in the house is extensive. But at the same time, you can also watch some NHL games on some of the side TVs in the back. So if you need to get your fix of the Leafs or the Canucks or the Oilers or the Sens or the Habs, you can still see that on the side of the house as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us from Pyeongchang, South Korea, from the Pyeongchang 2018 Winter Olympics. Brant Feldman of American Group Management. You can go to his website. What's your website again, Brant?
It's www.agm.us. If you want to follow me on social media, it is AGM Sports. And I'm posting lots of pictures from here in Pyeongchang and Gangyang and I certainly try and share the experience of what it looks like here.
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a person or group that deserves to be recognized. A virtual version of British Columbia's favorite dessert treat goes this week to Alberta NDP Premier Rachel Notley and BC NDP Premier John Horgan. They both need to sit down over a real Nanaimo bar and iron out their differences. The BC NDP government has promised to do everything it can to stop the expansion of the Kinder Morgan tar sands oil pipeline. Alberta is boycotting BC wine because Horgan is holding up construction of the pipeline that would help Alberta sell its oil to China. Saner heads must prevail in the battle over this pipeline, which got the federal government's nod. Albertans want the royalties for their economy. British Columbians have a legitimate fear of oil spills polluting their shores. Nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for February 18th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. Be like James Plett, who signed up for the $10 a month NewsHound level. Do it before March 31st, and you'll receive a free copy of my ebook, Red Mittens and Red Ink, The Vancouver Olympics. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.